For May the 28th, 2021, we talk about Miitopia, Viviette, and we ask you to pitch items that would make your favorite game characters' lives easier. Welcome to Level 373. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Mysweth.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, you were out of town last week.
Yep, was visiting New York, seeing some people from work. Well, I was going to say I haven't seen since the pandemic, but a bunch of them were hired during the pandemic, so a lot of people haven't seen at all.
It's still still technically true that you haven't seen them during the pandemic.
Yeah. That's true.
Nice. Did you get to do anything cool when you were up there, or was it just entirely business stuff?
Yeah, pretty much just, you know, hanging out, that sort of thing. The day I got there was the first day that New York, like, completely opened for people that were vaccinated. So there are a ton of people out and about. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And it's, like, early enough in the summer that it's not terrible yet. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Did you get to, like, go to some place that you were, like, hadn't eaten before? Or like, you hadn't eaten at for a while?
I tried a vegetarian restaurant in Chinese food. I got Chinese food at a vegetarian restaurant in Chinatown.
Cool.
Too many Chinas. Basically, I got like lotus root cakes and red bean cakes, which were both good. And then I got Buddhist rice, which was very not good.
What makes rice Buddhist?
It's vegetarian.
Okay. So like it's made with like vegetable broth.
Maybe? Yeah. So my understanding is that's like a dish that exists all over like Southeast Asia, but doesn't necessarily have a super standardized set of ingredients.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it just has to meet a particular criteria.
Right.
Yeah.
So the problem with this one is that I couldn't tell what any of this stuff is, and there was a bunch of goop in it that looked like boiled chicken skin.
Ooh, that couldn't be right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming it was some form of fungus, or maybe like a some sort of like bean curd, or you know, something like that.
Yeah. But mystery substance, that would put me off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing probably if you were more of a vegetarian eater than I am, and probably particularly in, like, you know, that cuisine of that part of the world, it probably wouldn't be that surprising.
Uh-huh.
The thing I did find kind of interesting is that, you know, the menu in big letters, you know, says, you know, everything in this, you know, this is all vegetarian food. But then the actual menu itself was broken up based on what it was imitating. So there was a beef section, a chicken section, a pork section, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I'm assuming, and Jala, I feel like you might know more about this. My understanding is that Southeast Asian cuisine and like a lot of the Buddhist cuisine, stuff like that, has kind of a more developed mock meat, you know, thing where, you know, they will have, you know, not just like slab of tofurkey, but, you know, actual dishes and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because a lot of that area of the world is just vegetarian for religious reasons and such. So yeah, like they have been making stuff that way for a long time. You know, they've been vegetarian for a very, very long time. So it's not like some of the stuff that the West comes out with, you know, because the West by and large is mostly omnivorous. So, you know, like they're just kind of reinventing the wheel, if you will.
Right. So. Yeah. The other thing that was interesting is while I was waiting for my food, I got to watch them shooting part of a episode of apparently The Marvelous Miss Maisel. Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, a show that I'm convinced nobody watches, but when I make fun of it for that, then people say, I watch it. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you don't exist. I think you're a bot. And I'm like, oh, we've known each other for 3 years. And I'm saying it's a long con.
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting because basically this kind of alley of Chinatown, everyone there was dressed up like they were from the 1950s and there were old-style cars and stuff like that.
I probably would have had been ushered off the set for looking at those old-style cars. I'm not like a car guy, but I'm a vintage thing guy. So I'd be looking inside.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting also watching them be like, you know, the entire alley is, I don't know, maybe 300 yards. And so watching them do like, all right, we need to do the car driving through scene. And so like the car just kind of drives through and then kind of backs up and drives through and, you know, just getting their takes.
Oh, their own little time loops. Oh, that's cool.
Yep. Yeah. So, fun stuff. Had a great time with work stuff. So, yeah, just kind of cool.
Very cool. And you made it safe. That's good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jala, how about you? What's up?
Elephant ears are taking over my garden because of the rain.
This is the fried dough with the cinnamon you get at the fair?
Yeah.
No, not in my garden. Oh, that so would you be mean like your Big Rock Candy Mountain kind of stuff you're talking about there. No.
So you mean you're no longer vegan and you're now eating elephant's ears?
No. They're endangered, Jala.
No, I have very, very large tropical plants that I have three of them, and they have taken over a large section of my garden. Even though it's a container garden, they are growing beyond the confines of anything they save.
Just,
you know, fuck your walls.
little sunshine piggies just snorfing it all up.
Yeah, so I'm gonna like I actually had just repotted a bunch of stuff right before it started raining, and then it's been raining for basically 2 weeks straight. And so whenever the rain stops for real enough to dry out to where it's not like a lake back in the back, you know, of the house, then I need to repot everything I just repotted because it grew so much in the rain. Mm-hmm. So now I have to repot it again. And then I got to shuffle plants around because these stupid elephant ears have taken over. Mm-hmm. And like, that's fine. I can just put, you know, plants that need sun, but maybe not Texas sun underneath them, and then they will be protected. So that's fine. But like, you know, it's going to take a little bit of shuffling and stuff. And I got to move some hibiscus that I have in the same planter.
Yeah. They're really impressive. Looks like you got some color out of space stuff going on there. Nice.
It is as I always suspected.
And how about you, Cole?
Oh, not a whole lot. I was talking earlier that today has been like a bunch of like yard work, but I've also been clearing out my spare bedroom to make into my, like, you know, second office VR room, like exercise room, you know. Mm-hmm. Problem is that spare bedroom was kind of, I mean, I had kind of given it over to the cats, you know, and so I had to take down the bed that was in there that they slept on a lot. And, you know, I tried to do it slow so they would understand that something was coming up. It, like, it's heartbreaking to look in and see them laying on the floor, like in the spot where they would have been on the bed. It's like, mm-hmm. Girls, I got you a new cat tree for in here. Like, stop making me feel bad. I had a terrible experience yesterday. I thought that Dottie was missing, but she was just hiding very well. Oh. I got real nervous. But she was just hiding under my recliner. So, yeah. What were you going to ask, David?
So I feel like exercise room and VR room are the exact opposite of what should go together.
Like, both of
that
them
implies heavy metal things to stub toes on and trip.
Oh, you can keep the heavy metal things over in a corner, you know? And the VR, like the nice part about it is you set up like a fence. So like you point at the ground and you say, all right, this is all of the safe area, and it will like put up like a fun little like grid wall to warn you when you're getting too close to being out of bounds, which is nice. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And like there's a gesture you can do even to like pause the game and then just like look out through the cameras as well. Mm-hmm. If you need to like reorient yourself, you know? Yeah, no, it's, it ends up working okay. It's just, both of those are things that require space. Mm-hmm. And sure. It's space that will be, you know, useful, more useful than the spare bedroom I've had for 2 years that literally nobody has slept in.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, get an air mattress, and I've got a couch and stuff if I do need to entertain. So it's all about reprioritizing space and all that, but that's all that's going on. I should have that ready sometime here. Yeah. But I think that we should talk about some, you know, we should do the regular kind of show, do the grind, the multiplayer, and the emboss. Do you think that would be a good thing to do?
It is acceptable.
Okay, so let's get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you first.
So, I've been doing a bunch of No Man's Sky.
Cool.
So in kind of a weird turn of events, finished up the 2 months long first season.
Okay.
Or as they call them, expedition. So reward being a gold version of your starting ship with like top tier rarity and all that stuff. So that was kind of cool. And then the second season starts, and surprise, it's 2 weeks long.
What?
Yeah, kind of weird. So, like, whereas the first one was very much, like, it basically took you through the entire game. Every major aspect of the game. This one was super, super compact. Started you in the middle of nowhere, gave you a lot less resources, but also the things you had to do were, you know, like previously you had to visit, you know, 35 new solar systems. Now you only have to visit 10, you know, things like that.
Okay.
And all along the way, there's, I guess, sort of some, ARG, alternate reality game.
Oh, stuff that like it takes you out of the game, like doing web browsers, kind of stuff.
Right, right. Although I guess maybe that's not quite the right term, because in this case, it's more like, I guess, like, you know, kind of in-game riddles and, you know, implying, because unlike the first one, you couldn't actually see what the final, the final reward would be.
Okay.
And so you get to the final kind of out of five steps, the final step where you have the last set of challenges, and basically you're interacting and researching these breaks in the kind of the space-time, which is a fairly common theme in No Man's Sky.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're tracking this renegade signal, and ultimately you get to the end, and what happens is out of hyperspace pops the Normandy from Mass Effect.
Okay. I saw headlines about that, and I figured it was like a Fortnite thing, like the you know, it just was a promotional. I mean, because this coincides with the remastered, re-envisioned collection kind of thing, right? So it pops out, and then what do you do with it?
So basically, in the game, you have your freighter, which is your capital ship, And then you recruit frigates, which are basically, those are what you send out to, accomplish missions, do scouting, that sort of thing. So it's kind of the management aspect of the game. And okay. So the Normandy is a S-class frigate, and that's a unique class. So normally you have like industrial, combat, exploration, support, and trade. The Normandy is considered a like scout combat.
Okay.
And it's got a special, they can basically, your ships can have perks, and it's got a special perk that I haven't seen before, that's silent running, okay. Which is, kind of its thing in the game. I haven't figured out what that actually does. I'm assuming that means that it can't be damaged, in your, when you send out on missions, which would also be a clever way of making sure you don't lose a ship you can't get back.
Right.
But I don't know. But overall, it's just a really good ship. Also, everything in No Man's Sky is randomly procedurally generated. So, each of the ships have like a couple of like lines of information. A kind of story flavor about the ship. Mm-hmm. So the line for the Normandy is needs an aquarium.
Well, it should come with one. Well, is it the first Normandy or is it the second Normandy?
I think it's the first Normandy.
That one, I believe, didn't have an aquarium.
Yeah,
I think it's only the second one that has the captain suite. Yeah. Well, you know. I suppose that makes sense that because you are investigating these inconsistencies in space time or what have you, that makes sense that it would bring in something else from a different universe.
Huh. Exactly. So yeah. So I'm not sure I would want this to become like a Fortnite thing where it's just all the time doing this, but it was kind of fun, and mm-hmm. it kind of fits with it just being a quick 2-week thing.
Nice.
So yeah, be interesting to see these rewards. You can basically get for free on any of your accounts, which is interesting because that then means, for example, when you start another account, you can just when you start another expedition, mm-hmm. you can start with now like some certain top tier things, and that can help you, especially at the start.
Nice.
So that's
nice.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So other than that, just a little bit today, Xbox Game Pass added Maneater to their games.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I played a little bit of this a while back. It was added around the PS5 launch. It was like the first month that the PS5 was out. That was on PSN. This is a shark game, right?
Right. Exactly. So it's by the people that made Killing Floor, and yeah, it's kind of Grand Theft Auto except sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave it to you to debate which fish take on the role of the prostitutes, but
I don't know. I'm not gonna touch that one.
Fair enough. But yeah, so you're a shark, and there's a like shark hunting reality TV show going on, and the evil shark hunter kills your mother, but you bite off his hand to escape into the water, and so you're now out for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe also are motivated by anger over humanity polluting the ocean.
I mean, anger's complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that anger is the only emotion that sharks can feel.
Oh, I mean, so, if they feel any at all.
Right, that's true. you know, godless killing machines.
Doll's eyes.
But as you do all this, there's kind of a nature documentary style narrator just commenting on the stuff you're doing and occasionally dropping presumably true shark facts.
I double checked a few of them when he was giving them, and they checked out. Mm-hmm. Also, it will highlight when there are disparities, like, oh, it makes no sense for it to be here. Like, oh, it's, you know, bizarre that this shark, which normally is in the Indian Ocean, is here. But, oh, well, you know, just kind of hand waving it. Yeah. The voiceover was the thing that stuck out to me as being fun, because that's Chris Parnell is who that is. SNL guy. Voices Cyril on Archer. You would recognize him if you saw him. Dr. Spaceman from 30 Rock.
Nice. Yeah. So, and he's excellent in this. I mean, it's... I feel like this, again, kind of gets back to my theory that, like, the one thing you have to have a game is good writing. I mean, because overall, this is a deeply stupid game, like almost aggressively dumb.
Yeah, but it doesn't pretend to be smarter than it is. But, yeah,
exactly. But my point is, like, it would be, you know, without that voiceover, it would basically be like GTA without social commentary.
Yeah. But there, it kind of, you know, provides a nice, it's a nice through line. Yeah,
exactly. The other downside is the game seems fairly janky. In particular, like, it defaults to borderless window mode. However, if I scroll down too much, it, like, brings up the little Windows pop-up bar. And then if I put it I now have it to, like, just full screen mode, but now my mouse pointer is, like, if I want to select a menu, I have to click, like, 2 inches above whatever I want to click.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, so, like, the game's definitely got some jank.
That's been out on PC for a while. Like, it was an Epic Game Store exclusive.
Yeah,
that might tell you something.
I have no idea. I just that it seems like they would have had a chance to get it patched up. But
true.
Yeah.
So yeah. But, you know, like I said, it's you know, basically a fun dumb game. You're eating seals and stuff like that.
Right.
So. My biggest concern long term would be just, like, if it gets... I feel like there's a narrow line to walk on this of, like, most of the people you're killing are innocent people.
Right.
And
right.
So, like, that's something that has to be handled gracefully. I know, like, for example, like, oh, Payday 2, I kind of burn out on, you know, their depiction of, like, what if just slaughtering, you know, tons of bank tellers and cops.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how that goes.
Yeah. If that will wear out its welcome. Yeah. Like, have you played enough? So in the time that I played, something that I figured would probably wear out its welcome is, like, when you are dealing with combat against a ship or somebody who is, you know, on a boat, the breaching and flying up in the air and, like, locking on to somebody and then, like, doing the tail slashes before you fall back in, like, that just seemed really, I don't know, it was pretty unsatisfying, and it felt like you didn't have as much control over it as you needed. Like, have you run into that? Like, did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I definitely think there's something to that.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like there is a system in there somewhere.
Yeah.
In that, you know, I know you can do things like you can actually, like, jump up on the deck of the ship and kind of belly hop around and like attack people, and you can like grab people and slap them into other people, you know. So like, I know there's, you know, a couple of verbs you have, and so my hope is that maybe as the game progresses, it kind of builds on those and lets you specialize in those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But definitely by, first blush, I totally agree. The other thing I think is the gameplay, the combat with other like alligators and barracuda and stuff like that is a little bit like Tokyo Jungle, in that there's kind of like a, you know, will kind of lock onto you and sort of flash an attack, and then other times they'll flash that they're open and that's when you want to attack, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like they try to make it much more arcadey, whereas for that type of system, it seems to me like a more deliberate pace kind of works better.
Yeah. I remember it like kind of had like almost like a parry system almost.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Huh. Can you see yourself like sinking more time into it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll probably play some. I could see it being just like, you know, I play a number of hours and then I'm like, yeah, that's enough.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe it'll hook me.
Did you do that on purpose?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. Nice. Yeah, I don't have any more questions about it. I'm happy to hear that your experience is lining up with mine.
Yep.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's all I got.
Cool. Jala, how about you?
Hey, so I mentioned this a while ago, and I didn't talk about it, so I figured I'd go ahead and mention it, even though I haven't gotten any further in it. I played the first third of Bioshock 2 Remastered, my first time to ever play this game. I had streamed a number of years ago, I think it was 2015 or something, the first Bioshock when I played through that. So, I intended to get to Bioshock 2 sometime, and it's been on my computer ever since. And anyway, I finally booted it up and played a third of it. I will go back and play it more eventually. It's just that right now at work, I'm having to do a little bit of overtime, and I'm out in my office all the time on my PC, and I really kind of don't want to go back out to my office to play games.
Yeah, I feel that.
I kind of want to like lay in my bed with my Switch. So, you know, so that's why I've been handheld so much. But anyway, eventually I will finish the rest of this game. I promise. It will only be a couple of settings. But anyway, this was originally released in 2010, the before the remastered version, of course. And it is criticized for its slow start, but I didn't personally feel that it was poorly paced. Maybe it's because like the era that I am now playing this game 11 years later is a very different time and space than when it first came out.
People had their knives out for Bioshock 2 because it was a sequel to a beloved game, you know, like it never could have satisfied them. I am a Bioshock 2 partisan. It's my favorite of the series, so.
Well, and then it was also criticized in its time for being too similar to Bioshock 1, which I guess you can see if you are basically wanting to be fussy, but the scenario is different and enjoyable as an extension of the first game, and there's plenty of other games that are pretty close to their first entry in the series when they make a sequel, so I don't have a problem with that either. You know, the art style, voice acting, level design are all, you know, fun and continue to be in the same quality and spirit as the first game. And in this game, for anybody who does not know, because there might be somebody else out there who didn't play it, like I didn't play it for all this time, He plays a big daddy, which is to say basically a ghoul in a suit that looks like a walking dive ball with a drill attached to an arm. And Cole, I remember, has a tipless daddy statue.
I do.
And that was a level title once upon a time, or was an a toady. I don't remember which.
I dusted the tipless daddy here recently. Yeah.
Yeah, because it broke off of your little statue that you got as one of your like pre-order big special box set.
Yeah, it was the collector's edition. Apparently, it was a pretty common problem. People said, "Oh, you can get that replaced," and it's like at this point, because we had that level title, it's just funnier having a tipless daddy. So yeah. I don't really. It doesn't need to be perfect. It has a story now. So
yeah, right. Well, so Delta, the Big Daddy, is patrolling Rapture and Underwater City with Eleanor, his little sister. Eleanor's mother, Sophia Lamb, takes Eleanor away and forces Delta to kill himself. And he wakes up a decade later, resurrected by little sisters that are under the control of Eleanor. And due to his pair bond with Eleanor, has to find her really quickly or else he's going to die again. I don't know. To what extent Big Daddies have anything other than the programming? I mean, like, I looked up what they look like inside the suit and then immediately regretted doing so. but anyway,
Delta's
like,
Delta's different. He was a prototype one. The ones that you see later that are more kind of animalistic, they went through a different process than he did.
Okay. Well, so I was just like, I don't know if like, oh, you've got to do it or you're going to die is really going to be of any interest to him at all, really. But, you know, whatever. I mean, if you say so, I will agree because I don't know. I haven't played the rest of the game yet. So you get to fight Splicers, which are mutant type junkies, basically, and then other Big Daddies. And I stopped at the end of the third level during one of the fight off a mob with a little sister extracting Adam segments. But because I was streaming it and I had some friends on voice chat with me, I had very, very little idea what's actually going on in this story. I know that there's a Sinclair guy who sounds like a salesman. And I think he's from like a rival company to somebody else. And then there's a scientist lady named Tenenbaum, and both of them are allied with me at the moment for one or another reason. But that's about all I know. And that's okay. Yeah. I don't know. Like that's all I got. I was really trying to be into the story on the first game. Mm-hmm. And like really pay attention to that. But then again, I was also not on a voice chat with friends,
right.
So it was quite a different experience. But in the subsequent playthroughs of this, like I say subsequent playthroughs, subsequent streams of the rest of this playthrough, I will probably not be on voice chat with anybody. I will probably just be playing the game with Dave over my shoulder, probably jumping at the jump scares because I don't react to jump scares at all. So, but yeah, it's fun. I just stopped because I was basically done sitting down and I wanted to get up and do something else, and I just have not gotten back to it because it has been busy and I don't want to sit at my computer. So I will get back to it sometime. So any questions about my experiences thus far in BioShock 2?
No, I'm happy you're playing it. Like those sections that that section that you got to where you were fighting off the waves of Splicers and the Big Daddies, while the extraction's going on, like that's kind of the meat of the game. You spend a lot of time doing that, and that's why I think that this BioShock 2 like sings in comparison to BioShock 1, because like the heights of BioShock 1 were preparing for the fights with the Big Daddies and then, you know, dealing with them. This is a bunch of those with added complication. So I am excited for you to get to see more of them because they get more interesting. And have you met Big Sister yet?
Yes, I met Big Sister and had a fight with her at some point.
Big Sister's good.
So it was easy for me to just pick up and play and not get confused about controls or anything. It still was familiar to me, even though I had not played the first game in 6 years. So, you know, but anyway, so that felt fine. Like I haven't had any trouble picking that up and doing anything. And then I guess too, since revisiting the BioShock sphere, by going into this game, I kind of can look at it and go, wow, there are so many things that have been influenced by mm-hmm. this game that now I know what they were actually referencing. That's cool, mm-hmm. you know, and that kind of yeah. thing. But that's about all I can say about that. I mean, like, you know, back when I played the first BioShock, I liked it, although I also was like, you know, they could have ended at the part with what's his head that you have to fight before they added Frank Fontaine, and then whatever the ending boss was. Like, I was real overall.
You pronounced that wrong. It's Frank Fontaine.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
So
I know for me, I eventually put it into easy mode and spec'd for all of the abilities that just make you blast lightning when anyone attacks you mm-hmm. and just would walk through and be like, duh, duh, duh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, anyway, so that's all I got about that. I would like to talk about a couple of other titles that I have okay. begun. So the next one is Viviette. And this is a survival horror adventure puzzle game by DYA Games, which is a single person, published by DYA Games and Rainy Frog in 2018 for Switch and Windows. It has 16-bit sprite art and fabulous sound design with 3D positional audio and atmospheric soundtrack. Definitely recommend headphones for this cool. game. The story begins with a guy in a hospital just coming to after some coma or something. And he begins to remember what happened to him and how he ended up in the hospital. And then the rest of the story is told as a flashback. So you know that at least one person survives. And a group of friends go for a picnic or something like that on an island, and they split up right before they shove off to go home. Three of those friends disappear, and the fourth one, the protagonist, has to figure out what happened to them and find all of them inside of a dilapidated, sprawling mansion. So you find out that your girlfriend, which is one of those other people, has become possessed by the ghosts haunting the mansion, but so far I haven't figured out where the other people are. My girlfriend, though, keeps on trying to chase and stab me, so it's kind of like, what if Mr. X, but delusional girlfriend instead? Okay. And luckily, she remains inside the house, so you're safe outside at the very least. So that is at least, you know, one little blessing there. And I just posted in the Slack some little clips from my Switch so you can see mm-hmm. the game. Anyway, unluckily, the key to solving what's going on is inside the house, of course. So the girlfriend will literally chase you everywhere mm-hmm, in the house, mm-hmm. including save rooms.
Oh, that's
so she will follow you into the save rooms. And like there was one instance where she followed me into the save room and I had, you know, just started saving the game and I pushed the button. I'm like, oh, I hope she doesn't catch me. And then I die. And then I'm like, I'm stuck in the horrible loop.
Were you?
But no, I dodged. I managed to dodge and okay. get out of the way. But you cannot fight her. You can only frantically push buttons if she grabs you to try to tear away from her. And it does, I think, a chunk of damage, or I don't know if that's damage or stamina that's being torn right. away, but you can get away from her and still survive. But you have to push buttons like a maniac to get there. So yeah. The only other thing that you're doing in this game is trying to solve puzzles and read letters and stuff lying around that give you clue about the former inhabitants of the mansion and why it's haunted and stuff. It's supposed to be about 4 hours long. I've played about an hour and a half so gotcha. Far. So, David, you had something to say?
I lost the timing for that joke.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. So yeah, it's got some fun bits to it, and it actually is making me want to play Corpse Party because
it sounds really similar to Corpse Party.
It's kind of like Corpse Party, except I know from just like looking up information just for research for the show that a lot of the puzzles are pretty much obtuse. Like the Steam page for it even says, you know, these puzzles are not obvious and you have to really look at everything around you to try to solve them. Mm-hmm. So I am not emotionally attached to this concept of I solved all the puzzles. So, like, if I get frustrated with something, I'm going to look it up, and I'm not going to be shy to say that thing. I don't have time in my life to be frustrated for several hours and stuck on a game. So, you know, I will continue to play through and see what happens. But basically, you get a very bad, a bad, or maybe the good ending, but you probably have to follow a walkthrough to get the good ending. So, I have not gotten super, super far into it. Like I said, well, I say I haven't gotten super far. I've gotten about like a third through, maybe. In any case, I look forward to playing the rest of it. And it actually manages to make you feel on edge if you have the sound up to where you can hear it and you're paying attention to everything, especially if you got like headphones. Yeah. It gives you that feeling of tension and such that you want out of a horror game. So anyway, I look forward to more of that. Any questions about Viviette?
No, this looks cool. I'm curious to hear more about the puzzles, like what kind of stuff they end up having you do, if it's find the item and put them together, or if there's kind of more complicated ciphering that you have to do.
Yeah, I will let you know, like, once I have a good populace of information on that. But so the last thing that I have to talk about is Miitopia. Now, when I first saw ads about it, I rolled my eyes, but then I thought about how Miitomo that they had out a while back brought me closer to several of the listeners and answering all the different questions and triggering conversations with them. So I thought I'd go ahead and try this out and just see what it was, because there's a demo. And so I have been playing the demo ever since. And it's actually really substantial. It allows you to play a decent chunk of the beginning of the game. I've put several hours into it. Basically, the paywall is a physical space in the game with a guard at a castle that won't let you pass. So since I don't have $50 laying around to spend at this particular moment, I have backtracked and have been basically grinding for money to upgrade armor and weapons, because you can carry over your progress to the full game. So I don't know what I was expecting. I guess I was thinking it was going to be something like Animal Crossing or Sims, but I got this cute little RPG where you can assign roles, looks, and personalities to every single character in the game. So that's fun, like from villagers to your main party. And the story starts with the Dark Lord, whom you can assign and whom I made Dave, stealing everyone's faces and putting them on monsters. And you are a wandering adventurer and you take it upon yourself to save everybody's faces. So you set off on a quest to retrieve the faces and stop the Dark Lord.
So are you saying you're trying to help them save face?
Yes, indeed. My first party member in this game was Cole. And I've had a lot of fun watching him and everybody else doing things. There are lots of things that these little guys have been doing. I have been this game is super, super charming. It is more charming than I thought it was going to be. So you can assign jobs to the player party, such as warrior, cleric, mage, pop star, and chef. Those are the first ones you can pick from. And there's also apparently lots of other jobs in the full game that you can get later and unlock to put for later party members. You can assign their name, their appearance, their personality, and you can give them a war cry and a special stance of your choice. And when you get new weapons and armor, you can opt to take the stats of the new armor, but choose the appearance of any other item that you've had before.
That's
to wear
really good. I'm happy they did that.
Yeah, so you can make fashion of it if you really want. And which is good, because currently, Cole, your character is wearing a frilly robe, and it's really frilly. And I was like, I can't with the frilly robe. So now you just look like a Lutheran pastor. Because you're a cleric.
Yeah.
so you're like in linens or something, like white linens with a little, anyway. So So you fight monsters in turn-based battles, and you can set your own character to auto-battle if you want, and all of your other party members are automatically on auto-battle. The only person that you control is yourself, so it's kind of, I think they're trying to simulate actually playing with other mm-hmm. people, you know, like as if these are those other folks that you are interested in having this adventure with. And each of the personalities has different quirks to help them in battle. I'm energetic, so it means that my character sometimes deals extra damage but also takes a couple of points of damage because I'm so excited that I hurt myself in the process. Okay. And then you, Cole, are cautious, so sometimes you take a turn warming up before you act, which gives you the ability to do two attacks like after that first thing, but you have like a higher chance of hitting or something like that, or you do more damage for those two hits or something. Desiree is cool, so she sometimes deals targeted damage to a weak point or will ignore status effects. And Tiff is laid back and sometimes isn't paying attention to status effects to be damaged by them because it's such a bother. And other times, she dodges an attack behind another party member that has the highest defense, and that happens to be me because I'm a warrior. So I take the hit instead, and this actually caused a problem where my character finally got fed up after her dodging behind me three times. I got mad, and then like I was pissed at her, and then we had a quarrel. But because she's a pop star, she did like a special skill that allowed her to make amends and like basically wipe it away. So I don't know what happens when the two characters have a quarrel, but apparently like that's a thing. So yeah. And I mean, Cole, your character like was just peeking in the window when a couple of other characters became better friends and you were jealous because you liked one of them. And so it had this like this horror music in the background, like and then it's like Cole saw everything and is jealous of Tiff. And I was like, I want to know what happens. I want to know if you go and turn into a killer or something. It's really funny. Really, really funny. So you get gold and food items from fights, both of which you can use at an inn. Inns pop up along the path when you're out adventuring, and they don't cost any money. It's just like a place that you go in between fights to regen all of your health and everything. Food items can be given to any party member to increase their stats, but they have each party member has likes and dislikes. So if they really, really love that particular food, it gives them extra points. And if they hate it, it does almost nothing. So like you might have a hit points up item, but like if you give it to your low hit point person and they don't like it, they're not going to get any benefit out of it. So like personality is like a big point in this game. So you also don't have an item shop. Your Mii's will request money, which you can decide to give them or not give them. And if you give them money, they have a particular item that they want to get at a particular time. And there's a chance that if they go out and go try to go buy that item, they'll come back with something else entirely, usually healing items. If they come back with a healing item, then they give you back any extra money. So you also have arcade tickets and outing tickets that you obtain at different points in the story for your progress on your mission. The arcade tickets give you mini games to play where you can win either gold or items. And the outing tickets allow two Mii's to go somewhere together and get to know each other better and deepen their relationship, which gives them the ability to use special assists and like stat boost each other and stuff like that, help them dodge attacks and whatever. So you can also swap party members around in the inn so different people room together, and that also increases their relationship. And right before the end of the demo, I got a horse, which you can also customize, and you can build your relationship with the horse too to get further assists in battle. Like Cole, you rode in on the horse and just like swiped every and killed everybody with your little staff. So, you know, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
that
sounds about right.
And like you're yeah, and your battle cry is Umbasa, because like that was a thing that you were saying on Abject Suffering for a long time.
Yeah, that's from Demon's Souls. Yeah.
yes. So also there are bosses. They have the faces of key members of society that you have to return the faces to. Like there's a town at the beginning that you're trying to get all the faces of the townspeople of that particular town back. And so like each of those faces was tacked onto a really strong monster that was a boss monster. So
you're doing like are you doing like ActRaiser or Dark Cloud stuff where when you rescue them the town kind of expands?
The town doesn't expand, but they give you stuff. Okay. So, and that also, like, you have to finish all of those kinds of quests before the next part unlocks. So it's all part of the exploring and all of that. It's part of your mission to go get these people's bases. Right. So, and then also, so I mentioned you have hit point and magic point healing items, but you also have HP and MP sprinkles, which you can access from the menu, and you can give back a certain number of hit points or magic points to your party members, one point at a time, until you run out of sprinkles and basically what looks like a salt shaker. Sprinkles
like from an ice cream sundae?
It looks like a salt shaker, but when you save a certain number of people, the number of sprinkles you have increases. So basically it levels up with you proportionately, because the number of people that you save is proportionate to the level, the experience that you get, and so on. So like you get more sprinkles, as you go. So basically if you're short one, you know, magic point to do a special skill that you want to do, you can use sprinkles. And, you know, go ahead and do the skill that you need. Yeah. And you run out of those, and then you can't get any more until you rest
at the
end.
Like that's like a tabletop thing. That's that they call them different things, but like, stuff. Yeah, like opportunity dice or something like that. Like embellishing a roll a couple times a day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, like, for a game that is like very story light and silly, it's got a lot of depth and a lot of stuff going
on.
And this is all in the demo. Like I haven't even gotten to the rest of it, but like when it says, you know, like this is the end of where you can go in the demo, it shows you the little trailer for the rest of the game, and it's like over 700 different items and all these different jobs and so on and so forth. And it looks like it must be like a pretty substantial, pretty long game actually. So it's just that I don't have the money right now. I kind of just want somebody else to buy it for me so I can keep playing it, because I don't have money for that right now. I've been really, really enjoying it. And then like once I realized I was at the end of the demo, I came in from work and I'm like, I can't play Miitopia. Like I can play something. I've got so many other games to play, but I want to play Miitopia because it's just delightful. And like, you know, I'll be sitting there playing the game and then Dave will just turn and look over my shoulder because he just wants to see what's happening too. He's really curious. And,
I mean, so, it seems like custom made to make those little stories, you know, that you told. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I want to get more party members so I can make David and Ben and Dennis and other people and like stick them in there too.
Yes.
I just picked, you know, well, to start with, I just kind of picked like the people that I talk to the most. And then, you know, like I'm going from there. But, you know, like I'm excited. I want to see more of the game. But I'm surprised with how cute and fun it really is. So,
yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like a good time. And I mean, how long the beat puts it at like the main plus extras is like 45 hours. This is not a slight game. Like even the regular main story clear is close to 30. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So, yeah. Any questions about Miitopia?
No, I mean, I'm curious to see how the additional jobs work. Like, how does the chef class work? Did it say?
I don't know. I don't know, because I didn't get enough party members to have a chef. You are a cleric, Desiree is a mage, and Tiff is a pop star, and I am a warrior, and I don't have another one.
Does the pop star do like? Are they like a bard? Do they do buffs or?
They do buffs, but they also do like damage to everybody. Like they can affect all of the enemies with like a low attack. Like it's not really a strong attack at all, but it definitely lots of buffs. And also some abilities that, you know, will trigger status effects and everything in the enemies, which nobody else has the ability to do status effects at this point on enemies except for her. Cool. So, yep.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
and I'm a killer.
Yeah, you're a killer. You're like, apparently, I don't know. It's not confirmed in this game yet.
Right. Yet. But I cannot escape. I cannot escape that rumor. Oh, well.
I mean, come on. It was like, ring, 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 ring. I highly encourage listeners to take a look at my Twitter and just like, you know, or pull up Twitter and then search at Jalachun, hashtag Metopia, and just scroll through those because they're a lot of fun.
Nice. Yeah, I don't have any more questions. David?
No, that's all I got. That sounds frankly terrifying.
Oh man, is that all you had?
That is okay. All
I'm gonna sorry, it's easier to just make a point of opening the can loudly than it is to edit it out. So I've been very busy with assignment play for other stuff, but I have been playing a small game. It's a mobile game is how I'm playing it, but it's available on Itch as well. It's called Castaway on a Weird Island, is what it is. It's made by the same developer mm-hmm. who made Desert Golfing and Golf on Mars, two mainstays here recently. He also made a puzzle game that I really enjoyed called Freeways. This is his take on kind of a micro genre that has popped up and been going for a while on mobile, that are called bro likes, not BRO, but BROUGH, named after Michael Bro, the developer of a game called 868 Hack. But these are like micro roguelikes, is what they are. They're played on very small grids. And kind of the idea is you're supposed to navigate these small grids using information that they provide to let you know like what your safest move is, with the goal being to reach the exit of a particular stage and to pick up any goodies that you can along the way, while also protecting yourself from any kind of hazards as it is. This you're playing as somebody who shipwrecks on an island, and you have to try and make your way to the raft, which is on one of the squares. The entire island, all of the squares, it's an 8x8. I think it's functionally a 7x7 grid is what you're on. But all of the squares are covered by fog usually. And what you have like around the center, kind of like play field, is a bunch of information to help you deduce what is in particular spots. So like off to the left of the grid, it will show you that like, all right, there's a gem that's to the left of a skeleton. There is, a coconut that is next to a centaur. There's a treasure chest that's below the raft or something like that. Above the grid, you will see icons that say, all right, in this column, there is, you know, this kind of thing, either a weapon or an enemy of a particular kind, but you don't know like the horizontal, you don't know what row it's going to be in. And off to the right, it is showing you the hazards that are there for you, or the things you want to pick up, sorted by how many water tiles they're adjacent to. Is this making sense?
Okay. Yes.
And you know, by looking at all of this information, it is up to you to deduce what the safest possible passageway is going to be. And you know, this is roguelike, right? So you're trying to make it off of an island, and of course, as you are sailing your little raft, you crash on another island. and each new island is its own little stage on this little grid, and it's, you know, really fun little logic puzzles to figure out Not just where everything is, but like individual enemies will do different stuff. So like some, you know, like the skeleton, it won't hurt you unless you like walk onto the same square that it's on. There's a matador that is really interesting. So like if you walk, I think it's if you walk onto the square in front of it, he will attack you, but you will trade places. So it's like he goads you into running at him. And like there are dragons that if you are like within two squares of them, they shoot a fireball. So like figuring out what all of those do is also a fun little aspect of this as well. Like this is a free game, you know, like I don't think I paid anything for it. I was just like, I wonder if this developer I like has made something, and it turns out it's actually really good. Nice, simple, systems based, like predictable, but with a real fun logic deduction kind of angle to it. Oh, also, you're picking up little gems. Some of the hints you would want to you can spend those gems to unlock them, or you can keep the gems and it'll add to your like little currency pool that adds to your score if you want to, if you feel that you can proceed in the dark. It's good.
That sounds really complicated.
Yeah. It does a very good job of onboarding you to it. You know, you go through a couple of different like tutorial kind of things, and then it sets you loose. And for the first several levels, it's, you know, pretty low stakes. But yeah, like, you know, in my, you know, runs can last a while, but it doesn't really matter because it's just on your phone. So you can play a couple of screens and then put it down as you're going. It does a pretty good job of keeping you alive long enough to understand how the rules come together, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it's neat. Have either of you played anything like that at all?
No, not really. I've seen, I've seen some weird, like, you know, I've seen like what there's a slot machine roguelike and a minesweeper roguelike, stuff like that. So like I've seen some of the weird niche roguelikes, but not really gotten into any of them.
Yeah. But that's all I've got. You know, I could talk about The Witness, but I'm going to talk about that on a show. I could talk about the game we're doing for Bonfire Side Chat, but we're talking about that on Bonfire Side Chat. Just one of those things.
I see how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all I've got. If you guys don't have any other questions about that. Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what did you ask the nice people?
I asked something that it's apparently very complicated. Your favorite video game character has it rough, but they got creative and invented something that's going to revolutionize their task. What did they invent for their grand debut on Shark Tank?
And I will get us started here with Jeremy, who says Gabriel Knights starts solving supernatural mysteries around the world with a small and fully mobile HR department who build a database to identify and resolve Gabriel Knights' potential social blunders on all seven continents.
Good answer.
Yeah. Just, you know, just some software as a service, HR, you know, just an HR solution. And a hefty purse for legal fees. Yeah. God, Gabriel Knight's a good series. Let's see here. David, what does Julia say?
Julia says, Gwen, fully self-starting charcoal.
That could have solved a lot of problems. Just kind of get down there, just throw a match and run.
Yep.
Jala, what does Dave say?
Dave says, fed up with third-rate minions, Ganon has invented the intelligence crystal, which is purported to imbue even the lowliest creature with the dastardly cunning that the bearer of the Triforce of Power possesses. However, this crystal is in fact a highly efficient cloning device that copies the user's mental ability and pastes it as a secondary personality of the targeted minion. He only requires funding for creation of a fully functional crystal with which to eventually wrest the other two pieces of the Triforce from their current owners, as the prototype crystal is prone to reabsorbing the cloned Ganon personalities after a short period of time.
Complicated.
It's got a lot of, and this is a vision, all right? A vision.
It's revolutionizing villainy is the thing. Yeah.
Indeed.
And I'll round us out here with Rookie, who says, Commander Shepard invents delegating tasks. All three Mass Effects can now be completed in 20 hours, and the Reapers never stood a chance. Yeah, Shepard's kind of a micromanager to a certain degree. There's such a thing as an away team, dude.
Or lady? Well, I mean, there's a away team. It's just, you know, the original series away team.
Oh my gosh, I've got one. I just recently the most recent new game I've played is Resident Evil 8, and Ethan always has some bad stuff happening to his hands, you know, just horrible things. Yeah. It's a real problem. He would have so many fewer problems if his hands were intact. So I've invented for him gloves. And they can be like armored, like they can be gauntlets, yeah, or what have you.
Gauntlets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just give him some gauntlets. Maybe throw in like some bracelets that'll like mist some of that healing liquid that he likes to douse his hands with. I think like prophylactically to make sure that they can reattach later or something like that. Yeah, like it doesn't matter if he can just pop them back on. I think that he can save himself a lot of problem in the first place. Gloves.
Good answer.
So mine's somewhat similar. I think just on kind of the platonic ideal survival horror character, mm-hmm, gun.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, you know, does Ethan have a start out with a gun in this game?
In 8 he does. Yeah, he's got like the military training and stuff by the time 8 comes around. Chris has been running him through some drills. In 7 you get one relatively quickly, like after the introduction, but you've got a knife for a little while.
Yeah, and he holds his knife like he wants to cut himself.
Yes.
His hand off. Come on.
Yeah. Not that it would make a difference.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's just like one of the Futurama. It was like a Futurama Wizard of Oz parody. And Zoidberg was the Cowardly Lion, and the wizard, which was Farnsworth. And it's like, and for you, instead of courage, I've given you a gun. And Jala, how about you?
Well, I did not talk to Dave about what he was doing for his answer. I also had a Zelda one, mm-hmm, but mine was for Link in the original Zelda game. He made a homing device for the Triforce, kind of like a Dragon Ball bleeper, so he can find all those pieces without having to try to futz around the whole map going, where is it?
Damn it, now I have to check all 8 temples. Nice. Well, that was fun.
Well, some of those temples are hard to find.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh.
It's been a while since I thought about the Dragon Ball trackers. Huh. Mm-hmm. Bulma invented those, right? She was the gadgeteer. Yeah, there we go. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a lot of just like latent Dragon Ball knowledge that has been sitting around since middle school. Yeah. That was a fun question. Thank you very much, Jala, for putting that up. Thank you, everybody, for responding. And if you want to get in on these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what's Netflix up to?
Well, Netflix is considering doing a monthly game subscription bundle like Apple Arcade's Apple Bundle. A statement from the Netflix spokesperson said that our members value the variety and quality of our content. It's why we've continually expanded our offering from series to documentaries, film, local language, originals, and reality TV. Members also enjoy engaging more directly with stories they love through interactive shows. So we're excited to do more with interactive entertainment. And they have experimented in the past with interactive video experiences and video games, such as 2018's Black Mirror Bandersnatch, which was a choose-your-own-adventure style movie. I think I might have even brought that for one of our news segments. Mm-hmm. And a similarly styled experience for an episode of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt in 2020. They've mm-hmm. also produced several game-based series, such as Dota, Castlevania, and The Witcher, along with upcoming shows based on Magic the Gathering, Sonic the Hedgehog, and League of Legends.
And Resident Evil.
And Resident Evil, which I am looking forward to watching. They all have also produced games before based on Stranger Things, a mobile game, and Stranger Things 3, the game. So far, there aren't many details about Netflix's plans made publicly, but it's obvious that the company is interested in continuing to explore and expand that audience. Netflix subscriptions have slowed over the past year and competition in the streaming space continues to grow. But Netflix said in 2019 that its biggest competition was actually Fortnite, which, of course, is a video game. But Epic Games is also building what it calls the metaverse, a growing virtual world that's more than a video game. In the past year or two, Epic has had concerts. I remember distinctly bringing up that there was a marshmallow concert in Fortnite.
Yeah.
And then also multiple movie nights where players can log in and attend a music event or watch films or debuts of upcoming movie trailers in the game itself on a screen and have their little character emote and react and stuff. And they have, you know, that kind of thing going on. So, you know, interesting stuff. Don't know what it's going to develop into, but, you know, that's quite potentially something in, you know, good, possibly.
Maybe
we'll see.
Major hedging in that.
Yeah. I'm curious if there's going to be exclusive content on it. It's a really crowded space.
It is, for sure.
Yeah. So I think like exclusive content would be the thing that would make it attractive.
I think they would be better off producing more video game based things or doing some more of their little experimental movie, you know, types of experimental movie/game things than they would be trying to jump into the gaming market per mm-hmm. se. But whatever, I don't know, we'll see what they do.
Based on what you have said and the stories that I've read, I'm unclear on what it would actually like be like what the like what like yeah. what are you delivering? Also, does it cost extra? I don't know. It just if you're entering this space, you really had better like be able to take on Game Pass or like Humble Choice, which are both really good, extremely good values. Yeah. I've got one here as we're talking about marketplaces and how we engage with games. There is a rumor out of Ars Technica based on some Steam update codes that people have dived into that imply, let's say hint that Valve is going to be making a gaming PC, a portable gaming PC that is similar to the Nintendo Switch. So self-contained, fully portable. And that's really all that we know. There's been some hints recently about a new controller in Steam client updates, something called the Neptune controller. We're unclear about it. It's the term that is showing up in the code is Steam Pal, which is actually a good name for whatever this device would be. My initial impression on this is that they already give you the ability to remote stream onto your phone, and if you have like a good controller, like that gets you most of the way there. You can even do this, you know, across the internet on browsers and stuff like that. So like a dedicated piece of hardware that would not personally fill the niche for me. Additionally, Valve has not necessarily shown a dedication to the hardware products they put out. I kind of liken them a little bit to Google in that regard, because they put out the Steam controller and then just kind of stopped supporting it. They put out the Steam Link and then delisted those. Steam machines were a whole debacle. Really, the only like piece of Valve hardware that they have stood behind is the Index, which is apparently still really, really good. Yeah, it's just they've been hobbyists, is what I would say. And I don't know that I would invest in their ecosystem so much, but it's interesting. And we've not necessarily seen, you know, usually it's a little bit follow the leader with what Nintendo does. I expected to see a little bit more following on the Switch, because it's really good and everybody wants every game that they have to be on the Switch, at least everybody that I talk to. So this might be good, but I have I'm cautious.
Yeah, like if it's out for a while and it seems to be sticking, then I would be interested in getting one, because I do not want to fuddle with trying to play a thing on my phone screen. I would rather just have a device to do it that I can have dedicated to that one thing personally. So,
yeah, so we'll see. There's going to be, I mean, we're not that far away from quote unquote E3. The constellation of remote events that will replace E3 this year. So who knows? There may be more. Speaking of PC games and stuff, hey David, what's happening with Dead by Daylight?
Yeah, so Deadlight by Daylight is continuing its two kind of traditions of adding lots of new content and a lot of that content being bizarre crossovers.
Yeah.
In this case, the new killer is Nemesis and the new, I don't know, heroes, victims, whatever are Joe and Leon.
Nice.
Yeah. It strikes me as a little weird because like these are the first heroes I'm aware of that by all accounts should be able to beat a fair number of the killers.
I mean, they're made of iron. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, Jill and Leon, they cannot and will not lose.
Right. So that's kind of weird, but you know, Dead by Daylight's just a weird, like, you know, mashup of whatever. Probably the most interesting thing I saw is that Nemesis apparently has the ability to infect people with the T virus, which causes them to like cough and just generally make noise when they're trying to be sneaky.
Oh, okay.
And then also when he kills someone, he summons zombies, which themselves can infect people with the T virus.
Okay.
So that that seems kind of interesting.
Does this come with like new levels, or is this kind of put into the existing scenarios?
Yeah, so I think traditionally each killer has had their own level. However, I don't think the article I found at least says what their level is going to be. I don't think at least from this that they've said yet. So
yeah. That'll be cool if they do Raccoon City theme stuff.
Yeah, that's why I'd imagine. So the screenshots show, looks like maybe it's supposed to be the mansion.
Okay, Possibly the let me pull the story back up. It might also be the new version of the police station, which kind of resembles the mansion.
It looks like at least some of it is, because there's a raccoon police in the background of one of the things.
Yeah,
I think that's what this is. This is a very bizarre police station.
Yeah. No, this looks like the police station.
How big is Raccoon City supposed to be?
I forget the stated population goes up and down. I think the closest analog would be like Pittsburgh.
Huh, because it seems a little weird that they have like this big of a police station and this highly trained of police, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, weird stuff's happening.
Militarization police and all that.
Yep. Yeah, they're going up against nemesis. Huh. Yeah, this looks cool. I'm gonna have to break down and eventually play this.
Yeah, or if nothing else, read all of the fiction on the wiki.
Yes, that is also a way that I it feels a little bit like declaring defeat, but also, you know. Nice. Cool. Well, that is a segment. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel like buttons.
Credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 373. It is the only time that the episode number will be a palindrome like that. It's not going to happen again. If you have noticed while you're listening that Jala sounds different and sounds better, that's because Patreon bucks have gone to replacing her microphone, which was on the fritz. Microphones just sometimes go bad, and she has a brand new shiny microphone. So thank you for going and doing that. I'm happy that it has worked out. Otherwise, if you want to help, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast for the multiplayer tips. Join us in the Slack. We have the Level channel, and tell your friends about us if you have friends who like video games and are looking for something to listen to. Is there anything that I'm forgetting? Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can catch my streams on weekends at DuckVTV on Twitch.
I'm Jalashan in places, although pretty soon I will be joining Cole for Resident Evil 5 co-op on Hexcrank.
You will. That should be not this weekend, but the weekend after this one, as you're hearing this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm David Mysmith, briefly in New York, but now back in Alabama.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Right. I only have one title. It is Anger is Complicated.
I have one title. It is Throw a Match and Run.
That's good. Okay.
So I had a couple from the same segment and then one from a different one. I had elephant ears. Those are endangered, Jala. And F your walls. And then I had, what if Mr. X but delusional girlfriend?
Delusional girlfriend. I like throw a match and run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can get behind that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you, you two. I'm going to go. I'm going to take this opportunity to hopefully fall asleep early. I have a big day tomorrow. They've got to get a lot done. Cool. Take care and have a good week.
Night, night.
Bye.
You too.
See ya.